American Empire. In an undisclosed location in the Rocky Mountains, tearing down the invisible walls of the overdeveloped world, one interview at a time. The Soulcast with your host, Soul.
Got my man Bus Driver on fucking Skype, about to talk some serious shit. Bus Driver's a pioneer of West Coast underground hip-hop, experimental shit. He came up through the Project Blow / Good Life scene out of L.A. Worked with a bunch of record labels like Epitaph, Fake Four, fucking Big Dada, and now Hellfire Club. He's an amazing musician, lyricist, performer. Check his shit out at busdriververse.com. And now a word from our sponsors.
Bus Driver, what's up, man?
How are you? What's going on, Sol?
Just chilling, just, you know, it's a beautiful day. Haven't done shit for a couple days, just sitting around doing nothing. What about you?
Well, it's really pretty Southern California right now, so I'm just kind of basking in all the sunshine and appreciating this city that I get to live in. So that's pretty much all I'm doing.
The sun is sparkling through the smog crystals.
Yeah, it's making my humble shanty look like the palace that it truly is.
Nice. All right, when I think about music that changed my life or changed what I did, it was definitely the West Coast Underground tapes that I got when I was tape trading in the mid-90s. You know, everything from, like, Project Blow to Living Legends to, you know, just, like, that whole scene. And we ended up getting, like, all these videos of Project Blow acapellas. I mean, you were in it. I think you must have probably been like 17 in this video or something. But I remember watching those videos and getting totally inspired by the cadences and the way that, like, it was kind of like slam poetry, but it was all, you know, about chopping up and creating vocal patterns. And to me, this, in many ways, this kind of symbolizes the pinnacle of rap as a craft, when these sorts of things were going on. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just wondering, like, I don't think anything like that can exist anymore. You know, do you? And if, you know, and why?
Now, what do you mean when you say that? You mean that us as the context for that kind of shit happening in rap, or just that kind of rapping happening?
I'm not talking about the individuals. I'm just talking about, like, the context is in, like, a setting where people get together and just try out styles.
I frankly don't know of anything else like that now, because I don't think people understand that the Good Life and the Project Blowed, they were crews, but they're also places where these individuals came and developed these styles. You know, I think what made my family, Project Blowed, and the Good Life and all that stuff, what made us so unique is that we were testing out styles in real time, in public, with you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, like, I got lucky enough to actually develop how I sound in ciphers on the street in South Central at the Blowed, like, in front of people. So, and I don't know how likely it is, how easy it is for that to come about now. But, you know, yeah, so I don't know. I don't come across anything like that now, so.
You know, before it was like, you know, you would save up for 4 years to buy your turntables. You'd save up 3 years to buy your first MPC. And now people just download a program. They're doing it and, you know, they're on stage after they've recorded their second song.
Yeah.
I just, like, I think what I like about it is kind of, like, the community vibe of, like, just, like, people, you know, like, it's almost, like, primitive wrapping around a campfire kind of shit, you know? So maybe there'll be a resurfacing of those movements when the system finally collapses. People will be scatting around campfires.
Well, now people are wrapping around a YouTube clip, you know, so everyone can gather around a YouTube clip. And I don't know. I think every day, all these eras have their various gifts. You know, all of it's fantastic. But it has changed.
I'm gonna like quote shit from your Facebook or whatever. I read something you were writing about some new rapper recently. Maybe it was like last year or something, and you were talking about how like, you know, oh, this guy's from, you know, from New York, but he's got, you know, the swagger of UGK, and like it's like this kind of post internet, you know, era. I guess that's what I was getting at with the local scenes is, you know, whereas Project Blowed had like a, you know, specific localized sound, scene, and aesthetic. Now that like it's like we're a global culture, and so rappers nowadays they're like, you know, you're from Alaska, but you sound like Bone Thugs and Harmony over Nirvana beats. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, it's very strange because most of these rappers are rap acts now are very prideful about their town, you know what I mean, and they always try to represent something, whether it be their clique, whether it be their city or their something, but they sound like they can be from anywhere, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, Drake is really like the pinnacle of that, and everyone who kind of follows in his footsteps after that, like ASAP Rocky, whoever, they really exemplify that. And all that means is that all of our artists now are just mainly, they're all drawing from the feed that we all get. You know what I mean? They're not drawing from something else that's hard to come by. You know what I mean? Like in the early aughts or mid-90s, that's kind of what people were doing. People were finding stuff that you couldn't really find, and that's what made their output kind of unique. But right now, they're just kind of reconfiguring what's in the feed and giving you their unique spin on it, which is valuable too, but it's different, you know. But yeah, so I don't know what's the better way of going about things. All I know is that right now shit is crazy, and it's postmodern and strange, and it's, you know, it's really crazy. The entertainment value is through the roof, but you know, it is a lot different. So.
Yeah, it's like I had to like get off like, you know, I was like on Twitter watching these Turkey riot feeds, and I just kept hitting refresh and I had to get off. I was getting like like my heartbeat was racing. I was like, I got to get the fuck off of here. You know what you were saying about the feed? I was listening to I was reading a Chuck D article a couple of years ago, and he was talking about how rappers spend more time performing on Twitter than they spend, you know, performing on stage. When you were dreaming of your rap career 15 years ago, did you think that it would require getting in front of a computer at least twice a day to say something witty?
No, but I'm glad that it's come to that. You know, I don't think anything's more absurd and fascinating than what's happened. You know, I think fiction couldn't match what's happened to at least my pocket of rap or my pocket of indie music right now. You know, it's so weird. And I don't know. I just laugh about it. But and I try not to take myself too seriously, and I try to focus on what matters, because that's a big part of surviving right now anyway, you know, a big part of my content surviving, not necessarily me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like I'm not browbeating these young kids, because I completely understand. It's all good.
But I mean, let's be honest. The shelf life of music, like your music will probably die before you do, you know?
Yeah.
Like all of our music will, like, you know, will our music will be forgotten by this, you know, I don't know, whatever. I'm just kidding. You know, when I told you about my show, I told you it was mostly like political, theoretical stuff. you know, your initial response was, you know, fuck it, let's go all in, let's talk about the environment, everything, you know, not that my views matter. And last interview I did with that guy, Pat the Bunny, he said something similar. It was like, oh, you know, if you want to listen to two white artists talk about anarchism, you know, check this out. And it's like, I feel that sentiment, but at the same time, I think about, like, what got me here, like, made me want to do music, and it was people like, you know, X-Clan or Chuck D. And I was doing this thing at this Resistance Ecology conference, and even during, as I'm speaking as a musician, I'm kind of downplaying the role of culture, and saying, like, it's not enough just to make a song, like, a song doesn't change anything. And then afterwards, like, these, you know, very respectable activists were coming up to me and saying, like, you know, you need to talk about the power of culture, because if you look around that room, every single person in the room is there because of music. Whether it's punk or hip hop or folk, like, music is what brings people into it. You know, it's like, so, I mean, obviously your music, your lyrics are littered with, you know, social critiques. But online, your critiques are, you know, they're always funny. It's never too over the head, but they're always very, like, your tweets, your online stuff is very political. And I think it definitely lays out, you know, where you stand. I don't know. Well, so I guess, what do you have to say about the relationship between politics and music?
I think it always should be, here's what I think. I think that music and entertainment and art is very, it influences people, and it has an inherent role in everyone's day. I think in the USC we downplay the importance or the impact of art, whether it be a picture or a song or, you know, whatever, a paint job on a wall. All of it influences the flow of our day, and our actual workflow. So it's very important, you know what I mean? So when you make a song, I don't think you can help but interject some of your ideals into those songs, and, you know, and like. And ever since I've been, you know, rapping since I was a kid, I've always wanted people to kind of agree with me to some extent, you know what I'm saying, or agree with the contradiction that I'm putting forward. You know, I haven't wanted to admit that recently, but it's the truth. It's kind of one of the base motivations of this shit. It's like, agree with me, I'm right. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? So, like, there's a little bit of that in the song. But when you do that, you want to make sure you're doing the right thing. You're like, am I right? You know what I mean? So, you have to think about it. And, like, where I usually land is that I land in a point of view where I'm allowed to be just caustic and just questioning. And that's pretty much all that I really do. I mean, I do lean to the left, but I don't really try to beat people over the head with facts, because I don't think, I mean, there are a lot of facts in my music, but I don't try to, like, impose them on people, because I don't think my music really works that way, and I don't like what that means. But I do try to sell them on some conflicting ideas, because I think it's a part of the entertainment value of my songs, and I want people to think about shit, because I want people to think that I may be right, you know, because that's one of my base motivations, because I'm right. That's it, you know, which is horrible, and I hate that about me, but that's probably one of the motivations. So what I mean to say is that, yeah, it's important to me to do that shit and to bring up issues, and to kind of just, I don't know, just kind of touch on issues. To me, it's not important to give anybody any answers. So, you know, I like to address things, but I don't want to give anyone any answers, and that's pretty much where I kind of stand on it.
I think that's important, man. I mean, the whole idea is about creating a conversation, getting people to think.
Because with your music, Tim, I think you bring up a shitload of questions. Like, your whole, I mean, more recently than anything, your whole catalog is just a shitload of questions, but you also have answers. I honestly don't have the audacity to have too many answers, but you have the answers, and that's something that comes with a lot of responsibility comes with that, you know what I mean? And I've personally always shied away from that responsibility, because I don't like arguing with people about some of this shit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'd like to. I mean, I hope it. I don't know. I don't think I have answers, really. I mean, I think I have, like, courses of action that people can take. But, I mean, it remains to be seen if any of it would work. And even if, you know, even if we got this utopia, I mean, people are still fucked up, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, the answer, go vegan, start a commune, you know, secede from society.
Those are answers, Tim.
No, I'm kidding, though.
No, you're not, though, because that's real shit. That's some shit that you should do. And that's some shit that people do in small increments in their own way. You know what I mean? So
that's the thing, though. I could never be in a commune because I don't really wash the dishes, you know? What movie did you like better, Spring Breakers or SEAL Team 6?
Yeah, it was called Zero Dark 30.
Yes. Which one do you like better?
Zero Dark 30 or Spring Breakers? I like Zero Dark 30 a lot. It made me want to kill every brown person possible as soon as I left the theater. So, good recruitment film. I like Zero Dark 30 more. It was a well-made movie. That ultimately had strange, nefarious intentions, but so did Spring Breakers. But I don't know. You know, when I think about Spring Breakers, it's all just kind of like a colorful haze. All I see is riffraff and just like a colorful haze of colors and tits. So I know that can't be good. You know, I mean, it sounds like fun, but I don't know. I think Spring Breakers is what you watch first, and then you watch Zero Dark 30, and then you sign up to a drone piloting program. You know what I mean? And that's the end game of watching those films. You know what I mean?
But you know the thing, like I always wonder, like those movies, you know, did they show those? You know, all those like torture videos, and they're like, all right, well, they're already used to the idea of it. Now let's just show them pictures of what it actually looks like so that we can move on to bigger and better things, you know?
Well, the thing about that movie that really, really got me was that there was never the main character's conflict. She had never arrived at any point where she questioned the conflict or where she questioned the U.S.'s role or had any kind of concern. Her drive was so, had this laser beam focus that I don't think represents how people think on the ground over there. And it was really single-minded. It's like, kill this guy. That's what I'm here to do. It's like, but what is, it's like, well, but what if you learn in 10 years of working in this region? Oh, you haven't learned anything except how to find this guy eventually. Like, I don't know, it was so artfully done by a prestigious director, so it seemed like it was even-handed, but it wasn't. Shit like that really fucks me up when, like, the leadership in these U.S. conflicts are seen as, you know, completely determined and not, there's no ambivalence in any action. It's just shit like that just fucks me up because it's just I don't think that's how you need to approach war, how war is even approached. And I don't like that perspective being sold back to people over and over again. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it's weird how kind of war has changed over the last the last 15 years. Like before, we always thought about wars like these big invasions, but after 9/11. I mean, I actually kind of forget about 9/11 sometimes. I'm always like, oh, that's how we lost fucking everything, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. So it's like, I think about that, and I think about, like, we've gone from, like, these ground wars to, like, these virtual wars where people are hanging out on Xbox controllers, you know, dropping their wife off at school, going to, you know, bomb somebody over in Yemen before lunch is over. It's like...
That's so horrible.
But, like, you know, how does this shit continue, man? You travel around.
Yeah.
You know, before, when I used to travel around the Iraq war, people were always bitching at me about, you know, oh, you're president, you guys are invading everyone. But now it's kind of like, you know, we're still invading everywhere, but we're doing it all together. People are just looking at the financial crisis as if we're all victims of the same collapsing system. I mean, do you see it that way? Or, like, what are your... What kind of shit do you hear from people when you're traveling?
Well, Barack Hussein Obama is a very, very well-managed celebrity. And people outside of the U.S. really gravitate to him. So I think the level of interpersonal discourse that I hear has kind of changed a little bit because people like him. But people do not understand the perpetual war. And but I definitely, people are way more content with things now in Europe. They're way more discouraged with France and Germany and their own financial institutions for taking on these austerity measures that have not helped the employment in their country. So that's more what I hear about than anything about the U.S. And the only thing I hear about the U.S. is how cute Obama is and how cool he is. Still.
I don't see why they're complaining, though. It's not like there were never any jobs in Europe. People just, they got massive amounts of money just to hang out and smoke hash.
They do have way more programs than we ever will. I'm just really curious. Like, I don't fully understand the whole global, everyone's interest in the Middle East. If everything flexes from day to day for me, so maybe you can help me understand this. I don't completely understand why the EU lifted the trade embargoes and allowed Russia to sell Syria like those anti-aircraft missiles and whatnot. I don't really understand what the end game is with that. I don't understand. I mean, I have some ideas, but I don't really know. Do you know? Because I don't understand that.
My understanding is that, you know, Germany runs the EU's finances pretty much. Like, they're the main economic driver, and so they're calling the shots. And,
of course.
You know, and that's where there's all those big banks. So it's kind of like the same thing that happens in America, I guess.
Of course, yeah.
One thing that was interesting to me was when I was in Greece, everybody there is complaining about workfare. Have you ever heard of workfare?
Nope.
So it's like you have people who've been on state welfare for years because they got out of college and can't find a job. There's 50% unemployment, blah, blah, blah. And so what the state is trying to do is institute workfare where... you know, if you're getting welfare from the government, if there's a job that you can do, they're going to send you. So, like, you could be a physicist, you know, on welfare, but they'll put you on workfare as a, you know, to go clean shit in the city sewers or to be a janitor. It's like forced labor.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's one thing we'll never have to worry about in America is... you know, them taking away our welfare and putting us on workfare because we don't have welfare is pretty hard to get.
Jesus fucking Christ. I had no idea about that.
But you know, America, man, America's so smart. They'll probably just cut out the middleman instead of waiting for people to go on welfare. They'll just put them on workfare without the welfare, you know?
Well, they already do that. It's called jail. Incarceration. It's a form of workfare, going to jail.
Yeah, no, definitely the prison industrial complex. They buy all the desks at the college by my school. They buy all the desks there from prison.
What? Oh. Ooh. Ooh.
When you were talking about Drake and authenticity earlier, I was reading a review this morning for something, and it was talking about... you know, like a made-up Drake line being, "We came all the way from Degrassi, but now we here."
Oh, thank you, Drake.
Well, here's... So I was looking at a map of Israel the other day in Palestine. Have you ever seen, like, those, like, time... those maps where it, like, starts off in 1946 and goes all the way up to now, and it just shows, like, Israel just taking land and taking land until now, literally, Gaza is just a couple specks The Palestinian controlled lens, only a couple specs. You know, it's like, no,
it's ridiculous.
Connected with like warp zones and time travel tunnels. Look, what are your thoughts on Israel? How is it that we have like this fucking complete blinders on and like the people just aren't pissed about Israel and Palestine?
Americans need to be sold characters, and I don't think we have a character that really embodies the average Palestinian, so we fail to empathize with them. And I don't understand people's adherence to the U.S.'s allegiance with Israel. I don't understand it. I don't know. I don't know why there isn't the will. I don't think we've identified with Palestinians enough to get people really behind the U.S. withdrawing their support from Israel. But I don't know how that's going to happen. People know what Hezbollah does and, you know, what they're capable of. Getting the political will to do any of these things, it's such a vicious PR war to get these, put checks in all the boxes so that people will allow governments to do things. I don't know, man. I think it'd be a good year, to kind of leave and live in like a little hole and like Greenland or somewhere, live in a cave. You know, I'm sure you can get internet access there. It's a good year to do that, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, every time I fly over Greenland, it actually looks pretty cool. Let's switch it up a little. We live in a digital age. You know, people like Aaron Schwartz, they're going to prison for, or he killing himself. They're going to prison for documents that should be free for everyone. You know, obviously, all the people who come to your shows don't buy your music. You know, we had a talk earlier about like originality and biters. And what are your thoughts on intellectual property? Do you have any friends who've been arrested or fined for downloading torrents?
No, I haven't. I think it's a horrible thing to be arrested for. I think it's practically a victimless crime. I don't think that shouldn't be the case. The current economy of music, though, as it goes now, kind of, at least, especially with rap, it really depends on free-floating, free content kind of being absorbed by people, because that's a big part of the marketing push right now. And so I do think that that's important, and I do think, you know, that people should have access to stuff. But as far as like everyone's like the whole economy and independent music being impacted by all this rampant downloading, I mean, it is true that it would help if people bought things, but I understand that the interfaces for purchasing music aren't as optimal as they should be. You know what I mean? Like it's just that we haven't really. I think that the music industry kind of missed the boat when they failed to link up with a Napster right when Napster had reached that point and had all those users using their services. You really could have changed how people consume music right then and there, but the music business kind of fought against it, and so we don't have those interfaces and those payment packages that we could have been using for years for music folks. So I don't really know how we make this all make sense at the end of the day, but all I know is that people need music, and they are going to get it somehow. And I don't know, we shouldn't be punishing people for that shit, for like downloading. Makes no sense.
Because recently, when I went to Portland this weekend, I went to Powell's Books, and just reminded me, like, you know, the book. I feel like bookstores are kind of learning a lesson from record stores, and trying to really make themselves valuable, you know? I think it's the thing about Napster is that, like, you know, it's where people were, you know? It's like, you know, you meet people where they are, and they just didn't know how to control it at the time. And I think that's the thing, is, like, a lot of the digital shit, like, boils down to control.
Yeah.
And just, like, you know, wanting to have control over your shit, and if you can't... You know, if you just throw your body to the feed, you know, it'll spit you out. And I mean, I think the difference is, though, like, you know, with major labels, you know, they're like doing this whole astroturfing shit where they're where like that the labels still have, you know, all the money that they ever had. Like they've taken a small dip, but the indies have been crushed. And so what the labels are doing is, like, they're resorting to indie tactics to sell major label stuff, and most people don't even know they're on major labels until their third mixtape, you know?
Yeah, that was key to Wiz Khalifa's success and Drake's success, and I think that template is kind of brilliant. Actually, that just is the template. That's how rap acts get broken now. I don't know. How do indies survive in this climate? So I don't know. Tell me something.
You know what I was saying? I was comparing Europe to America, and talking about how you play a lot of squats in Europe, right?
No, but I do sometimes.
Well, every once, yeah, I don't play enough. But every, you know, like, for instance, in Switzerland, when you play the squats, they're fucking awesome. Like, Bern, wherever.
Yeah,
or Geneva. Like, those squats in Switzerland where, you know, they've taken this property from the state. They run it for themselves, you know. Eventually, the city, you know, 30 years in, the city's giving them free electricity and water, and, like, it's a bookstore, it's a printing space, it's a meeting space. You know, people, you know, it's like all these, like, cultural things that kind of belong together.
Yes.
Under a roof, you know, good food, cafe, bars, music. Oh, and, like, that's, like, with the... You know, there's not, like, a circuit that I can plug into. You know, like, the circuit that we use in Europe, which is, like, you know, someone will go see Silver Mount Zion on a Monday. They'll go see Gold Panda on a Tuesday. They'll go see Bus Driver on a Wednesday. They'll go see, you know, some punk bands. I mean, like, people are just open-minded about music. When I think about America, I just think, like, that's the... To me, the number one answer right now is that we need, like, an infrastructure in the States that, you know, based off what happens in Europe, to support radical music.
Well, the U.S. is attempting to do that, and it's the advent of music festivals now. I feel like the U.S. is really taking to music festivals now, and that's kind of their attempt to organize what young people like.
I mean, I don't get it. It like baffles me. Yeah. You know, I'll play a show in fucking San Francisco and it'll fucking suck. And then I'll play some random German town and, you know, I have 100 kids coming up to me afterwards talking to me about Marx or whatever. And it's like, there's such a huge disconnect.
Well, you are a foreigner. And you do represent a very specialized phenomenon that only took place there. So you, if you recontextualize all your mojo, you could give it some more values sometimes. And apparently, well, that shit only works in Europe because they value art more. They've learned to appreciate it more. It's been factored into their day, into their recreation, their normal, you know, recreation or routines. So for some reason, they can appreciate it. I don't understand.
I mean, I think it's tied in. I think technology ties into it, man. It's like, you know, when you're walking around in Europe, people aren't staring at their phones. They're actually, like, looking around. You know, pretty much everyone you see walking down the street is staring into their phone. When people are at shows, they're watching it through their phones. And I think that, like, I think that the alienation and the overabundance of everything is just like Americans are just drowning in white noise, you know? I don't know.
Are they?
Brown noise? I don't know. Gray noise?
So how does that affect art, though? Like, how does that affect rap? If everyone's just like, I don't know. You know what? I think the person who most kind of highlighted what you just talked about was Kanye during his last, you know, how he premiered his last song. It's like he couldn't even post a song on a site. He had to spend thousands of dollars and had his song emblazoned in just an AV tag on a building in 50 major cities or some shit. Like, that to me is, I mean, that's uncanny. Like, that, and that's not even the end game. That's just him kicking off his campaign. This is really weird, man. It's really weird. It's like, people can't just pay attention to a song. You gotta fucking destroy. You gotta put a man on a building to make anyone care about it. Anyway, that shit is crazy. Rap is crazy.
That's actually one of my ideas. Is, have you ever seen those videos of, like, the father and son with the Hero HD camera sending, like, his Legos into space or whatever?
Yes.
I wanted to do one of those with selling live water and get a video of it going into space. You know, life is short, man. So, all right, well, I guess it's pretty much the last question. You've been a full-time musician for about 15 years. You've been on many major labels. You know, you've blown up.
Did I blow up?
Yeah, I mean, you're still around, man. You're still around.
Oh, so that means I blew up, and I'm just, like, living off the chemtrails of the blow up. Of the falling star.
Well, with the Pete Seeger model, it never actually blows up. It just kind of expands to the side and just continues along for
of course. I'm sorry,
for hundreds of years.
Keep going.
A lot of people buy into the myth of record labels and big breaks. You know, so I guess my question is, how have you managed to maintain a career? You know, what are the challenges? You know, would you recommend it, et cetera?
Well, first of all, I just really can't be thankful enough for, like, all the people who've, like, supported me and cared and been interested. Like, even you, Tim, I remember when I sold you my first album in front of the El Rey, God knows when, and, you know, you didn't need to buy it, but you did. I felt like you believed in what I could have done or could be doing, you know, and to me, like, that shit is crazy. So I've been really lucky to have a lot of that throughout the years. And I've also been lucky because I was a part of a really accidentally progressive rap posse who didn't know it really at the time, but they were thinking way ahead of the curve. So that really was good too, because I have a lot of things in my arsenal that kind of come into play every other year. It's like, oh, now people are doing this now I can do this more, you know what I mean? So it's, I got really lucky with that too. And but on top of that, the only thing that really keeps me around is that I'm genuinely curious about music and about how people do things and how I can figure out and do things with them or like that or better than that, or, you know, so I'm always invested in where music's going, which probably isn't healthy for a grown man, but it's pretty much the truth. So, and that's why I am going to be playing rap shows for a while.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I will say this. Your fucking live set is the most impressive one-man rap show I've ever seen. Fucking when I saw it a year and a half ago, I knew I had to go back to the drawing board, and so
it's crazy.
So much respect, man.
Oh, that's crazy. That makes no sense. Thank you so much. So it makes no sense whatsoever, but thank you.
Well, you know, I mean, this is something I think is interesting though, and So, I mean, we can talk about this for a second. So, when I saw you doing the live manipulation of your own beats, I was like, that is so fucking brilliant, you know? Because basically, DJs get paid to sit there and do that to other people's music. So, why can't a rapper do that to their own songs, you know?
Well, it's just nothing... Once again, I'm very lucky because of where I get to come from. You know, everything that I do is really rooted in shit that I just learned in L.A. Like, how I rhyme is all based on good life, blood and shit, period. And, like, as far as that, like, this is all stuff I learned just hanging out at Low End Theory for the past 7 years, which is another... which is another kind of HQ right now in this new era, and or in that era when it started. So, like, that whole shit, all that shit I do with the 404 and 303, that's just based off shit that I've seen homies at the Low End at Low End do, and I just incorporated that into my show. Not really because I thought it was cool, just out of necessity, you know, when I stopped being able to take my accompanist with me and I had to go solo and I wanted to make it interesting. I wanted to do shit. So, but yeah, I'm always thankful when I get, when, you know, things work out, because I really feel comfortable with this setup now and I'm really glad that, you know, I settled on it. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess I can make, turn this into one last question that I didn't get to ask anyway. So like, it makes me think about labels and, like, how we have, like, this need to label everything. And I think of, like, how, you know, it's, like, it hurts and helps at the same time. It's like, all right, so you're a rapper.
Yeah.
But on top of the rapping, you're also doing what an electronic DJ would be doing, you know? It has a kind of jazz sensibility. And so it's, like, when I think about, like, talking about what I do, what you do, and just, like, the obsession with fucking labels, like... you know, like, does that, like, how fucked up is that?
Well, people need to classify things. They need to be able to pick things out of the feed. So they need, you know, they need all the prefixes and the portmanteau. They need all that, you know, in the right order, you know. So that makes sense. But I'm not good at that because I don't really spend a lot of time thinking about what my shit is called. I really don't, so, and I don't really like saying things that may be inaccurate, so I really don't know, but it's something based on rap, what we do. Well, what I do is just my corner of LA rap. It's because I'm from somewhere, and I've taken the qualities of where I'm from, and I've put them in my music, but everything that I do in my shit is shared with people on the internet too. So I'm really just from the internet. So it's just internet rap.
I like internet rap. I've been doing it for a long time.
I know you're one of the OG internet rappers.
I used to battle people in chat rooms, and that's how fucking...
Oh my god, horrible chat rooms. My yeah. god.
Anyway, all right, Reagan, thank you very much for your time. Do you have any last words, any words of wisdom, inspiration, fear, hope?
Oh, man, I really hope I haven't ruined this installment of your podcast, so I'm so out of it. I've been up editing and stuff all night, so I feel like a loser. But, yeah, thanks for having me, and I guess I do want to talk about something. I want to talk about Hellfire Club, which is my rap collective, and which is, it's me and No Can Do and Open Mike Eagle. And the only reason why it's important is because it is kind of an extension of the Blowed and the Good Life. I mean, we're all Blodians and Hellfire Club, and we're doing a bunch of, I don't know, we're doing a bunch of fun stuff this year. Right now I'm working on our collective record, which is just like kind of just a mixtape of us doing songs with each other and our own solo songs, and we're almost done with it. And I don't know, I just want to tell everyone that that's happening, so please get it when it materializes in late summer. I don't know what it's going to be called, but it's going to be Hellfire Club, me, No Can Do, Mike Eagle, Milo. It's going to be fun. It's going to be silly. And it's going to be dope. And that's it.